to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone. I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and in today's interview I've got Amy Edelman from Indie Reader, which is a great website really aimed at readers, I guess, and trying to help them discover really great indie books. So we'll come on to that later. I just wanted to start with a bit of an introduction of what I've been up to, and this week I've actually been to two publishing conferences, and this is quite remarkable, really, because I've been very worried about this, and I think many authors are worried about, you know, and fearful of discussions with publishing professionals, with agents, with publishers themselves. And I was kind of astounded by the level of misunderstandings between the different groups. But generally, I think what it comes down to is we've all got to remember that we all love books, we love the industry, and, you know, books in whatever format, you know, digital, print, whatever, we are all consumers and producers in this industry. So I think if there was more collaboration and less, you know, polemic, things would be much healthier. But anyway, I actually went along to the Future Book Conference as as a blogger, really, for you know, representing indies and authors in general. And I found, you know, there's a few things that were interesting that I've written about on the bookseller blog, and there'll be a link in the show notes, but I just wanted to talk a bit about it for the podcast audience. So first up, it was really interesting. You know, there was a lot of really positive direction, specifically from Sourcebooks. Dominique Ricard, who is a really great lady. Sourcebooks is doing some really good things in the digital space. And also Faber, who I was quite impressed with as well, Stephen Page from Faber. Both of them were very positive about the future and were talking really more about the opportunities of digital, all the different things that they can be doing that are not just a physical book anymore. So there was a very positive outlook, but then it was the Future Book Conference, so I think probably all the old sort of people who hate all the digital stayed at home. So there were a lot of statistics that did sort of back up my feeling that the UK is sort of 18 months behind the US, but that also digital is, you know, there's no escape. This is happening. Mass market is heading that way. And that particularly publishers want to look at verticals and about reader-centric models. So that made me really think about, well, if you do want a traditionally published deal, then you really have to be careful who you go with, because not all publishers are digitally equal. And this was quite clear, because, and I'm not going to name any names in terms of who was anti-digital, but some people were sort of, you know, saying, well, no, the future is hardback. And if you think of how many authors are likely to get a hardback deal, it's just crazy compared to what publishers could achieve with digital. So be very careful, please, if you are getting, if you've got an agent or you've got books and you're signing away your copyrights, you know, really think about and choose wisely where you want your rights to find a home. Will your publisher be able to do the best for you in a digital future? Do they know what they're doing? And I would say that nobody knows what they're doing. So you really have to try and judge, well, is this publisher agile? Are they able to move quickly in a new environment and adjust to what's happening? And, you know, importantly, in the last few weeks, Penguin has come out with a self-publishing house. Bloomsbury has opened a sort of author training thing for self-publishing. With all these tools available for authors to do it themselves, what will a publisher offer you that is different to what you can do yourself? So I'm absolutely pro publishing, and I would take a book deal. I'd love a book deal with Amazon. that would be fantastic, because they can do what I can't do myself. I don't really care about having a print book on a bookshelf in my local bookstore. I care that tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people around the world can find my book online. So really have a think about what you want and what's important for you. The other thing that was really interesting, there was an international panel. They talked about Japan, Sweden, Iceland, the Netherlands, various different places. Oh, South Korea, which apparently is an amazing market. and we talked about global language rights, which I think is critical. What really, really pisses me off is when, you know, because I interact with a lot of Americans, a lot of you are Americans who are listening, and I see a tweet or whatever from an author. The other day it was... Boyd Morrison, who I quite like, he's a thriller author, he tweeted out, "Oh, my latest book is available," and I click on the link, and it's Amazon.com, and it's there, and I'm like, okay, so I go to Amazon.co.uk, and it's not available for 6 months, even in digital form. And so I tweeted him, I was like, well, what's going on here? This is crazy. And he said, well, it's the publisher, so what can I do about it? So what I would say to you guys is please, please, please think about when you sign up digital rights that you want to enable language rights, you know, for digital across the world at the same time. What is the point in doing a marketing campaign in the UK, for example, if your book is not available in America as well, because most of us do marketing online, so most books are available online. You can sense my frustration with this model. But also, if you are an author who has a traditional publishing deal and you have sold some rights, so for example, if you've sold the rights for the US and the UK, you can still go into the Amazon, the Kindle, the KDP.amazon.com and upload your digital files and sell it into the other markets, because Amazon has now added, you know, 5 new stores, Italy, Spain, etc. I mean, they aren't big at the moment, but all of these are just going to continue. Amazon's going to open up more and more English speaking markets. And well, for me, the biggest English speaking market I'm looking forward to is India. Amazing market, amazing people. And, you know, I think the Indian Kindle store is going to be a rocking place to be. Now also some of the publishers were really talking about doing apps and gamification, which was an interesting word, and creating degrees of value from copyright, from rights that they've bought. So really looking at what they could do that's not just a physical book. And they want authors with ideas for games and for apps and other media that would tie into a book and provide value add for the customer. Now, clearly also that's something that we probably can't do as self-publishers. We can't afford to create an app or, you know, some kind of multi-dimensional thing, game with our book. So if you're someone who has, you know, something exciting that could be multimedia, then finding a good publisher who's willing to partner is probably a great idea. Although I would say that probably I heard the really forward-thinking guys on the stage, and I wouldn't know how many people are realistically out there looking for this stuff. But I think there were startups there. There is an opportunity to be creative. And also they were talking about how traditional models of advance and royalties are coming down and changing to sort of sharing risk and reward, having 50-50 models, which I think is brilliant because that's basically what I like to do. As a micro entrepreneur, as I like to describe myself, I think the joint venture mindset is a healthy one. But I know that a lot of people who are afraid of these types of things, and you know, a lot of authors think that the advance is the be all and end all. But you know, they say something like 80% of books don't outsell their advance. So why would you even want that model? It just scuppers you on the next deal. So yeah, it's under promise, over deliver. That's basically what we should be doing, right? okay, and then also what was interesting is they were going on and on and on about discoverability. And for me, discoverability is what we do all the time as indie authors. You've been listening to me talk about marketing and how to, you know, help people find your books for hopefully years now. So I found it quite funny that these publishers are saying, you know, what we need is a list of people who are going to buy this type of book. And I'm like, yep, that's what we're doing on the internet marketing side. You know, you should have a list on your website where people can sign up for your book. You know, these are really old ideas in internet marketing that the publisher is now starting to realize. because they are now seeing that they have to market to customers and not just to stores. So they don't just market to Walmart or Tesco's or Sainsbury's for the big book deals. They actually have to market to you and me for a whole load of smaller books, I guess. So again, I think that's an opportunity for digital savvy authors to really show publishers they have, you know, what they can do. And again, you're in a very strong position if you can go to a publisher and say, look, I have a list of people and, you know, what can you offer me in terms of what I can't do? And John Locke, who, you know, the indie author who sold the first one to sell over a million books on the Kindle, he recommended having that list of people to sell to, and that's kind of one of his secret weapons. And I have one of those, and yeah, hopefully you do too. Okay, so that's kind of some of the things I learned at the conference. I also went to another one at the weekend. I'm quite tired, actually, really quite tired from all this publishing talk, defending myself and defending all of us all the time. So I've also written a post on the blog, you know, defining an indie author, because I feel that there is a really big discrepancy between what we are doing in terms of using professional freelancers, you know, professional editors, professional designers. We are doing basically professionally, you know, professional things, and yet the publishers and the agents and, you know, the way they were talking, it's as if we're just drawing a picture and uploading it and scribbling a, you know, a document and uploading it with no care. And I know there are some people who do that out there, but I hope that you take what we do seriously. If, you know, and if you are self-publishing, make sure that you do have brilliant quality in how you put your stuff out there. So yeah, so you can check out on the blog, I've got all of those links in terms of indie and what I learned at Futurebook. Also, just wanted to give you an update on Prophecy, my next novel. Now, I am totally committed to writing, well, getting this one out by New Year, probably be December 31st at this rate, and then getting on with the next one in the series, which is going to be sort of focused on Egypt and the Ark of the Covenant, which I'm quite excited about. I'm actually off to Oxford tomorrow to the new Ashmolean Library, museum, sorry, where they've just opened some Egyptian halls. So I'm going to go and do some research, which is awesome. But that's the third book. The second book, Prophecy, will be, as I said, out before New Year. And I've just put the cover on the blog, and I've also put the back blurb, which people have been wonderful in helping me with. So yeah, essentially Prophecy is getting ready to launch. If you enjoyed Pentecost, you're welcome to email me to get a review copy of Prophecy when it comes out. I will be looking for reviewers who enjoyed Pentecost, so please do give me a shout. There's also a giveaway on Goodreads that's valid until December the 20th, 2011. So if you're listening before then, come and join the giveaway. I'm actually republishing Pentecost in a different size, so I'm giving away copies of the what is essentially the first edition. So when I'm famous, it could be really wonderful, but you know, clearly it might be a while before it's worth something, but you never know. If you would like to be part of that giveaway, check it out on Goodreads, or there's a link on the blog. Okay, that was quite a long introduction, but I haven't done one for a while, so I just wanted to, you know, say hi before we jump into the interview. I do also have a, you know, some other things coming up. I have been doing a how to write a novel course with Ros Morris from nailyournovel.com. She's an old pro, not old, she is a pro, old hat at writing novels. She's written like 11 novels or something crazy like that. And so Ros brings the sort of pro side, and I bring the brand new author, this is what I've learned really recently side. And we've done how to write a novel, which is at thecreativepen.com/ novel, one would think. /write novel. Sorry, I should know it myself, shouldn't I? Yeah, thecreativepen.com/write novel. You can, there's one more live event, but it's all available as recordings. So you can go and check that out. That is $99 US and you get, you know, a stack of audio, video and all of the transcripts. Three sessions, so that's quite exciting. Yeah, so as ever, please do email me. I really do like to hear from people on the podcast because I do understand that you're a slightly different audience to, you know, the people who read the blog. So, you know, always welcome to email me and suggest any topics, or I'll try and answer your questions as well. Okay, let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and today I'm interviewing Amy Edelman. Amy is the author of three books and the founder of IndieReader.com, the essential guide to self-published books and the people who write them, and also the IndieReader Discovery Awards. So welcome, Amy.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon, I should say, London time.
Indeed. So why don't you start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background?
Well, I always enjoyed writing. I somehow never imagined that I would be a writer. I came to New York. I had an idea for a book. This sounds like a made-up story, basically. I was visiting family in Fire Island. I was out with a bunch of people, and I said, oh, I have a great idea for a book. And someone said, oh, I know someone who's an agent. It's like, okay. I got her name. Turned out she was somebody's assistant at ICM. I'm sure you're familiar with ICM. It's one of the three largest talent agencies in the world. I reached out to her. She said, sure, that sounds like a good idea. It was a nonfiction book. She couldn't sell it, but we stayed in touch. This was probably 35 years ago now. And so I kind of had an agent from a very early age. And anytime I had an idea for a book, I would run it by her. The first one to sell was called The Little Black Dress. It's a fashion history book, kind of a coffee table book. Actually, I'm a little ahead of myself. The first book that I did, I self-published, and that was, I was working in the fashion industry. That was called the Fashion Industry Resource Book. And it wasn't something that a traditional publisher would pick up necessarily because it was a resource directory. I ended up self-publishing it twice. This is back when, way before there was anything technologically advanced like there is today. So I had a friend who did it on the Quark program, which was a very early version of a self-publishing program, and ended up selling it to Fairchild a couple of years later. So that was my first book. That was my first self-published book. The Little Black Dress I did in 97. It was published by Simon & Schuster. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. There were some good experiences and some not good experiences. It was a good lesson to me in what you can expect and what you can get from a large publishing house. And then 10 years later, I kind of had, wasn't even my idea, it was my agent's idea. I had some life experiences going on at the time that my agent thought would make a good book. And that ended up being Manless in Montclair. It's a novel, memoir/novel. And that was published by a division of Random House, Crown Harmony Books.
So you've had some traditionally published books and self-published,
right?
So why did you start IndieReader, which is clearly about independence?
Well, I had read an article in the New York Times a few years back about the state of self-publishing, and shortly following that, there was something by Lev Grossman in Time magazine. And the thing that struck me most was that there were obviously good books out there to be found, but that there weren't traditional publishing houses who were willing or able to pick them up. I guess that's always been the case. There's always been more writers than there has been necessarily the demand or the ability for them to actually get discovered. And it seemed to me that branding an entire category of books as not worthy just because they weren't picked up or recognized by a traditional publishing house seemed very short-sighted. Mm-hmm. And especially in light of the strength of the indie film movement and the indie music movement, it seemed like the indie book movement was just something that was waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. And because I always thought of myself kind of as writing as a hobby for me, my day job has been public relations for years and years, not even in the book industry, more for consumer products. And it just seemed to me that indie needed to be branded. Indie publishing, indie books, indie authors needed to be branded in a way to make the consumer and the book lover recognize that these were incredible books. In some cases, they're unique to what's out there that traditional publishers are doing. In other ways, they're, you know, there's a lot of vampire fiction. There's a lot of mystery thrillers. But that it's a separate category rather than something that is kind of a leftover or something that's less desirable. That's where the idea came from. And frankly, after I read the articles and had the thought, I ran to my computer because I thought there must be something out there already that kind of is... I hate the word gatekeeper, but that there's a place to find the best indie books. I just thought there had to be, because generally I'm not good at coming up with original ideas, frankly. and then when I looked, there wasn't anything. And I thought, wow, this is a great idea. At the time, I was very busy with my PR business, so I figured I had a little extra money to throw into it. I found an incredible website designer, Tyler Dornbus, and ran the idea by him. And we put it together.
Mm. So and what does Indie Reader sort of, is it aimed at readers or is it aimed at authors? And what does it do for people?
Well, you described it at the beginning as the essential guide to self-published books. Basically, it's the essential consumer guide to self-published books. So although we offer services to indie authors, our main goal is to be kind of like a Rolling Stone magazine for indie books. There's interviews, there's gift ideas. We recently signed on a new columnist who's going to be writing about and recommending indie comic books because we just love the visuals and a lot of them are handmade and limited edition. We're looking for, in the process of looking for, so if anybody out there is interested, a columnist to curate the photo and art book area. Because again, there's tons and tons of amazing photo and art books out there. And we want the consumer to realize that indie is not just fiction or how-to. It's a huge, it's a huge area of people who are inspired to create things, to write their own stories. You know, we really see it, indie, as being about control. As much as I had good experiences with both of my traditional publishers, with my novel, I imagined this whole thing of, you know, picking from 1,000 covers and deciding what I liked and what would speak to the reader. And I walked in to meet my publisher and there's a picture on her door. And I said, oh, what's that? And she said, oh, that's the cover of your book. And I'm like, really? Because I didn't like it that much. But she said, well, Borders did and Barnes & Noble did. And, you know, what did I know? So, you know, I went with it. I wasn't crazy about the title either. But, you know, these were the experts, I felt. And so I left it in their hands. What we want to do is tell people that they should be empowered, that they should, that we want to tell them that, number one, although traditional publishing does offer an author a lot, especially a first-time author, it is not the fantasy of, you know, we're going to give you a big book party and you're going to have a huge book tour and, you know, we're going to give you a huge advance. that in most cases does not exist anymore.
So, I mean, I'm quite interested in what you think an indie is these days, because we're seeing a lot of traditionally published authors go the other way as well, where they are putting their books out, you know, themselves now straight onto Kindle, for example. And as you said, we've seen self-published authors get traditional deals. So what is indie these days?
Well, for indie reader, an indie book, we have a bestseller list that we compile every week. And this isn't things that have sold the best on our website. This is a bona fide bestseller list of indie books. It's funny because the New York Times had said they would not be including indie books on their list. And meanwhile, just last week, there were four of them, which we consider indie. We do not consider an indie book to be something that has been traditionally published and that then the author takes back, puts on a new cover. You know, some of them do edit the book, but I know from being traditionally published that you get a lot of help there that you don't necessarily on your own, that a lot of choices are made for you that you wouldn't necessarily make. And so if a book has been traditionally published before, we do not consider that, for our purposes, an indie book. If it is a traditionally published author who has done a book on their own, then yes, that certainly we consider that an indie book. Mm. So that's how we define it. In terms of how we define a book, because that's another thing, you know, again, we have limited edition comics. We're putting one up on the site in the next couple days, which is kind of like almost like a pamphlet thing. But, and I just read a story in the Times this morning about this new literary website that have original pieces. You know, it's not a book, but there are a lot of interesting, there's a lot of interesting writing that couldn't have been published, which we consider being put up on a website before, that is available now. So we look at that too as something that might be of interest to our audience.
Mm. No, it's certainly an interesting time. And I also wondered about, given that you guys in America are probably about 18 months ahead of Europe in terms of digital, in terms of indie and the acceptance, do you think that the stigma of self-publishing has gone away yet? Or what is happening in America with all of that?
You know, I guess it depends on who you ask, but I think it is very deeply ingrained. You know, 9 out of 10 people could not tell you who publishes the books that they read. But as soon as they hear self-published, oh my God, you know, it must be bad. And that's one of the reasons why from the start we took, you know, the word indie, because indie has such a positive connotation. Self-published does not. And I think, you know, it's a confluence of many different things, and it goes back very far, but it's almost, you know, when you're a baby, you learn, don't touch that, it's hot, and, you know, put suntan lotion on and don't buy a self-published book because they're all very, very bad. And I have to say, from the start, we had an editor working with us who was responsible for, you know, reading and having the books that came in to us reviewed. And she said, you know, I expect that just a couple of the books that we get in are going to be decent books. And she was surprised at how many of the books that we get, especially through the Discovery Awards that we're doing now. We had a lot of blowback in the beginning because the price is a little bit higher than, you know, like $10. There's some awards things out there where it like costs you very little. But we're finding that the books that we're getting, I think there's within the label indie author or indie writer, there's a lot of different groups. There are writers like yourself who understand that the book needs to be edited. I don't care how good a writer you are, traditionally published or indie, it needs to be edited. It helps if you know. Pick a good cover, design a good cover. There are certain things that you need to do. And I think that people who put the time in, those seem to be the people that we're getting who are sending their books in to the awards. It's just the quality is unbelievable. Mm. Really, really unbelievable.
Mm. No, absolutely. And I guess in that, you obviously see a lot of these books. And when you say the quality is unbelievable, what are the characteristics of a good indie book? I mean, clearly editing is one. What are some of the other things?
I think it's, you know, the thing is I think it's a lot of the same characteristics that are in any good book. You know, again, I think that we are looking for books, we're actively looking for books that aren't the same as books that are traditionally published necessarily. You know, books that, you know, are maybe a mixture of genres or something that's completely different from what's being traditionally published. But what we're finding is a lot of books that could be traditionally published. I mean, what a good book is, I think, is the same across the lines of whether, you know, it's a vampire book or whether it's a young adult book or whether it's an indie or whether it's traditionally published. Good writing, strong characters, an imaginative story, you know, it's the same, whether it's indie or traditional, I think.
Mm. And I guess coming back on that, you know, who published the book thing, do readers even know anymore? Because if you look at the, you know, selling books on Kindle, for example, people aren't shopping by publisher, are they? They're shopping by category. So do people even know what is indie anymore?
No, I don't think the consumer certainly doesn't. And they don't care. They really don't care. You know, again, as proven by the best-selling titles that are on the New York Times books. They don't care. And it's almost like a don't ask, don't tell policy, I think, from the media, because, you know, they're in an awkward position. They need to make money. And I think the reason they don't cover self-published books is because they don't get money. There's no publisher there to get money from. You know, the New York Times Book Review, if you look at those advertisements, it's traditional publishers that are advertising. So I think it really does come down to money in terms of how indie books are covered by the mainstream media. I think it's nothing but that. In terms of the consumer, they're just looking for a good book. I think price point does play a part in that, and indie books tend to be less. So again, my job, and I see this, you know, with my PR hat on, is to create a market for those consumers who are wanting to read something outside of the mainstream. They don't want James Patterson. Not that there's anything wrong with James Patterson, but, you know, they want something different. They want that sense of discovery that reading an indie book can bring. You know, oh, look, I found this. A publisher hasn't found it. My friends haven't found it. I've discovered this first. And we're trying to brand it, is basically what we're trying to do. And that's why the Huffington Post, you know, is important. That's why the USA Today recommendations are important. That's why I think the Discovery Awards are important. We're trying to create a brand. We're going to be announcing today or tomorrow that we are working with Barnes & Noble. Their editorial director just signed on as a judge for the IRDAs, and we're working with them to try and create a branded indie section, whether it's in stores or online. Because again, this is something new. This is something that's untapped. The whole category of indie, you know, it's like, I like to say, it's like Calvin Klein did for underwear. It was just underwear before. He came along, he put his name on the back of it, and all of a sudden it's a commodity. It's something that people want. And that's what we're trying to do with indie books.
No, that's interesting. Okay, so you've mentioned these Discovery Awards a couple of times. Why don't you just tell people a bit more about that?
It's interesting. When we started 3 years ago, somebody said, oh, you should do a contest. And I'm like, I don't feel like we have the credibility. And I hate the word contest. And so I started looking around at what was out there. And not to put anybody down, I can't comment on whether how good they are, how not good they are, whether they're worth the money. But what I noticed is that the people who were judging were not people who were necessarily at the top of their professions in the publishing industry. And you, some of them, they gave, you know, cash prizes, $1,000, $500, and gold stickers and dinners and all of that. But it seemed to me that the thing that would make the biggest difference for an indie author was discoverability. And I had read something, you know, Jane Friedman?
Yeah.
Okay, so she had given this, she was at a conference or something, and this is what she said. This is the difference between a book that makes it and a book that doesn't make it, is discoverability. And it seemed to me that the most important thing for indie authors would be to get the right people to read their books. I think that most indie authors, whether they admit it or not, are looking for a traditional publishing deal. Even if they don't take it, they want to be offered a traditional publishing deal. And so we went to publishers. We have the editor-in-chief at Gallery Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. We have Kate, I can't remember her last name, from HarperCollins. She's also actually based in London. I should look at her name. That's bad that I can't remember her name. We got three agents from ICM. We, in addition to another agent, Joelle DelBorgo, who's also pretty prominent in the field. And then for those people who aren't interested in the whole agent traditional publishing thing, we have someone from Kirkus Reviews. We have PR people. We have bloggers. Because these are people that are going to, if they read a book that excites them, they're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that is going to make the difference, the biggest difference, to an indie author. Either they want a bigger audience, they want more people to read their book, whether that's through continually being indie and just having more people talk about it, or through the possibility of being published by a traditional publisher.
No, that's fantastic. So where can people find that online, just so they know?
It's indiereader.com, and then there's a very pretty kind of place to click on the right side of the screen that says Indie Reader Discovery Awards. And then the Barnes & Noble piece, because we didn't have a retailer, that was the one missing piece, and I had connected with them probably a month or so ago, and they were very excited about the prospect of participating as well. So that's why that hasn't been announced yet. We're hoping to send the release today or tomorrow.
Fantastic. Okay, so you talk there about discoverability, and you've also, you know, had your own PR firm and that type of thing. So what are your recommendations for indie authors around their own marketing? And have you seen anything successful recently that has been good?
It's so hard. And I have to tell you, when I had my novel, I got incredible. I was on the Today Show, which is huge. I was the story. Where else was I written about? I got an amazing review in People Magazine, 3/4 of a page. So everything that you would think that I would think would make a bestseller was there. And you know what? It didn't happen. It sold respectably for a first novel. I ended up hiring a PR person who was wonderful to work with me to try to get the word out there. It was the most frustrating thing of my life. I'm telling you, Joanne, it was unbelievable. As a PR person, I pulled every trick out of the hat that I could think of. And I think that it's important to look professional. It's important look is basically that the book looks professional, that your web page looks professional. The thing that drives me the most crazy is not being able to find author contact information. I mean, my God, why do they make it so hard? Some of these, you can't find it anywhere. You know, you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, but I can't find your email is insane. That drives me crazy. So make it easy for people who want to reach out to you. There's lots of things that I think aren't worth paying for. A book trailer. You know, even having a website, while it's a great thing, you need to get people to go to your website. So I think it doesn't cost anything to, you know, to build a large Twitter following, to build a large Facebook following, It takes a lot of time. It's unbelievable. You can't just be a writer anymore. You know, as much as it's a wonderful thing to picture, you know, writing a book and then kind of kicking back and letting someone else do it for you, even if you're traditionally published, that doesn't happen. You know, you have a PR person for maybe 6 weeks, 9 weeks. Mm-hmm. After that, you're on your own again. So you need to be a business person, you need to be a PR person, and you need to be an author. And it ain't easy. It's not easy.
No. Yeah. No, I'm glad you say all that, because I've certainly found that to be true. And, you know, marketing my first novel was a lot of work, and it was all the online stuff you talk about. So, yeah, it is interesting. So
and are you pleased with the success of your book thus far?
Yeah, well, the other day I've hit 16,000 sales now of the first novel, and
wow,
yeah, and it's been in the bestseller list for religious fiction for 7 months, 8 months.
Wow, that's so amazing.
Yeah, so I'm quite happy. And the other day, I also, in terms of the financial income, I hit the amount that I would have got possibly as an advance for a first time author. So that made me think that it's, you know, it's worth doing. But as I've had lots of people on the podcast say, it's not about one book. You've got to have lots of books, like John Locke and Amanda Hocking.
Yeah, you do. But, you know, not every writer. I mean, people ask me, you know, so when are you going to write your next book? And I'm like, I just, you know, I'm averaging one book every 10 years. The first was nonfiction, the second was fiction. But there are some writers who aren't that prolific, and John is amazing. Mm. I love John. And, you know, there are several authors like that have many, many books out there, but not every writer writes like that. Mm. And that's a whole different kind of commercial success than somebody who might be writing a literary novel that takes them a bunch of years, and they don't have a backup coming out 6 months later. Mm. So it's not, I think then you're kind of, I think that's the situation for one type of writer. I don't think it's going to work for every kind of writer, because of some writers that just, they take more time. Mm. But still, I think the thing that you said that's the most important is that you hit what you think the number would be for the advance you would have received. So, you know, you're golden. Anything after this, and you did it your way, really. Mm. I think anything after this, you know, goes into the plus column. And then you start thinking about what your next book is going to be about. And
see what happens.
Not everybody's going to be, again, you know, James Patterson, or there are some people that write a lot of books and make a lot of money that way, who are traditionally published, and others who don't and
never will.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and it's about defining your success. I think that's the most important thing. Yes. Actually, on that, can I just ask again about your awards? Is it purely for literary fiction types, or have you got genre and commercial style as well?
Yes, it's for everything.
Yeah.
It's for everything.
No, that's good, because that's what annoys me about the competitions, is when it's, well, this isn't literary enough, so it doesn't really count.
No. I'm not a snob in that way at all. I think it's really about writing about what you feel. And again, being an indie gives you the chance to really let your voice dominate. Mm. I mean, yeah. I when you're working with a traditional publisher, there's a lot of other input that you get. And not that that's a bad thing. But I think that being an indie, the product, the book that you end up with is yours. It's your vision, really. And that can be across any category. I mean, I'm a huge reader, not so much now because I've been so busy. But I don't think that there's a bad... People say, what's your favorite genre? And it's... I mean, I just, over the summer, I read... The Hunger Games.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's young adult. So what adult would say, oh, my favorite genre is YA?
Yeah.
You know, it's finding a book that speaks to you and a really good story and imaginative characters. So I would never know. Indie Reader is really, as I said, we want to address all the different genres that are out there and all the different writers, because it's for book lovers. It's for book lovers who are interested in finding something new and kind of off the beaten track. So that's what
it is. Fantastic. Okay, so one last question, and you know, this is a horrible one. It's kind of, what do you see happening? I mean, this year has been huge for indie. I think this 2011, big year. What about 2012 with the Kindle Fire, the Nook tablet, all these new ways, and today the Kindle bookstore has expanded into Italy, Spain, France for independent authors. We can now publish in those countries. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's just been released today, so really exciting. So what do you see happening in 2012 in this space?
Well, obviously, I'm hoping that the consumers and the book lovers embrace indie as a category on its own. You know, that's what we are working for. I think, you know, we started 3 years ago, and I think we were way ahead of ourselves. I'm hoping that things catch up this year. But as far as the e-readers go, you know, it's funny. As I said, my first ever job ever was in a bookstore. I love the smell of books. I love the feel of books. And when my husband got me a Kindle for Christmas last year, it was like, okay, this is cute. This is nice. But part of the reason I haven't been reading a lot in the last couple of years is that either you go to the local bookstore or you go to Amazon, and you see a book that you think you'll like or that you've heard about, and you order it, you pay for it, and it gets there. And either you read it and you love it, and then you have a book. And I have a small house here. We have some built-ins, but they're filled to the brim. So then you have a book, and if you love it, I keep the ones I really love. If not, but if you hate it or you don't like it, and I need something now that grabs me right away, then you're stuck with a book that you've paid for. And worse than that, what are you going to do with it? You can't say to a friend, oh, here's a book I love. You know, I can't throw it away. What do you do? So around the start of the summer, I decided to pick up the Kindle and look at it a little more closely. And I discovered the whole you can read two chapters thing.
Something.
And so if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to worry about what you're going to do with it after. You know, if you do love it, then you can go out and buy the book and keep it on your bookshelf. It was so freeing to me. I was like high for 3 days. I'm telling you, because I downloaded a couple chapters of books that I thought that I wanted to read and ended up not liking. So that's fine, you know. And then I found books. You know, I'm looking through the bestseller lists or recommendations from my friends and family that I wouldn't have necessarily picked up, but then I was able to on the Kindle. So I think other people, to answer your question, that other people, people who travel a lot, people who don't have a lot of time, people who love to read, despite themselves, are going to fall in love with an e-reader. I think that's going to happen. But that said, I think there are going to be people still who are going to pick up a book too. So I think it's going to be split. I hope and I pray that bookstores don't go away, because there's nothing like a bookstore. Some people say it's going to be like it is with the record industry, you know, where the record stores are gone now. But I think holding a book is like such a viscerally pleasurable thing for a lot of people. You know, I'm hoping that it kind of finds its, you know, water finding its level. I think that a lot more people are going to be buying e-readers, but I think that they're not necessarily going to give up the bookstore and the traditional book.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Okay, so where can people find you and Indie Reader online?
Indie Reader is www.indiereader.com. And I'm at Amy at Indie Reader. Part of what Indie Reader does is we do book reviews. We don't charge for book reviews. So we would love authors to reach out and send us your books. We can't guarantee that they'll be reviewed because we get a lot of books in, but we certainly try our best. There's nothing better than discovering a new author. We also have a publishing services arm. So if people are interested in publishing and, again, iUniverse has its place, but if you want more control over what you're doing, you know, we invite you to look at our services because we do that as well. We don't really offer many paid opportunities on the site because we want consumers to know that what they get from us is, this is what we think is the best. Mm-hmm. This isn't what authors are paying us to do. But the book reviews is probably the best way if you want to have your book promoted on the site. We would love to see them.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Amy. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!